Hello, my name is Lisa Mansell, and for the past year I've been working on the Open Spires project, which has been a project within the Learning Technologies Group at OUCS. Firstly, apologies from my colleague Ilva Birkeland, who was on the agenda for today. She can't be with us today, so it's just me. And I must say that I'm not a learning technologist, but this is a project from Oxford which was all about sharing and neatly fit the conference theme of sharing. So the project, it was funded as part of the HEA JISC funded Open Educational Resources Programme, and was a 1-year project. There were a total of 29 projects which received a share of 5.7 million over the year. Oxford represented a research-led institution within the institutional strand of that programme. The programme was all about sharing learning resources, making them free for reuse and repurposing worldwide. And Open Spires had two main objectives. We chose to release audio and video podcasts from Oxford as open educational resources, and we also chose to investigate and report upon the institutional implications of OER release, so sharing our experiences and the lessons we learnt with other UK HE. Making material open broadens its use and enables it to be repurposed. This has benefits to students, teachers, and the general public, allowing them free access to educational materials from around the world. The OER programme acted as a catalyst for change. Projects had to address complex intellectual property right issues, create processes for managing and delivering the content, and address other issues such as quality control. For Open Spires, open means that our podcasts are freely available on the web with no registration required. They're free for reuse for non-commercial purposes, and we've used the Creative Commons license. We adopted the attribution non-commercial share-alike license, and that means that as long as the originator is attributed when the material is reused, anyone can reuse it, and it has to be for non-commercial purposes, and any derivative work, so if somebody uses just a section of one of our podcasts, any derivative works can only be distributed under an identical license. So what was our starting position? We had a slight head start in that the previous year, in October 2008, as Melissa highlighted, Oxford launched its podcast web portal and its iTunes U site. Within 18 months, there have been 3 million downloads through iTunes U from the Oxford material, and there are over 1,800 items available for download for personal use. And that's an important distinction between iTunes U and the Open Spires project. When we were initially talking to academics, they said, well, okay, what's the difference? I'm quite happy to put my podcast on iTunes U. That means people can reuse it or they can use it. But the license only allows personal use. It means it can't be used, for example, in a classroom setting to a number of students. It can't be cut up or mashed up in any way. It can't be modified or repurposed in any way. And that's what the Creative Commons license for Open Spires allows. It makes it much more usable in an educational setting. The other benefit we had from the iTunes U experience was it provided us with a pool of interested and engaged academics who we could approach to make that next step of making their material open. So our approach, we used an existing content production workflow which had been established as part of the iTunes U project, but we had to have some additional steps in that for the licensing and copyright issues. But by inhabiting that existing content workflow, we were more likely to succeed, and that open release of content was more likely to continue after the project funding ceased. Therefore, we thought it had the highest possible chance of being sustainable, and it was also the much more cost-effective method of delivery. The project encouraged a devolved model of content production, so individual academics or their departments they could record, edit, and upload their own content. But for the time of the project, we also had to support a large number of recordings ourselves, and that aspect of it isn't sustainable. And I just wanted to show you, this is our content workflow. So we have the two streams, the supported model and the devolved model. But the advantage of the devolved model is that it doesn't just include the recording of the item. They can do the editing, they can do the cataloguing, they can upload it, they can go almost all the way to publishing. The only stage we absolutely control is that publishing stage. We liaised directly with academics, but we also used agents across the university. And these agents helped with communication, project updates, and they also helped put us in touch with other academics who we couldn't otherwise reach. The collegiate structure of Oxford was quite difficult to navigate through when you're wanting to just communicate to everybody. We don't have central mailing lists or central email lists, so those agents really helped us to spread the word amongst the colleges and other departments. We ran lots of focus groups, we had a survey, and we held many face-to-face meetings and presentations across the institution. And those focus groups in particular provided really valuable feedback, particularly the concerns and barriers that the academics may be feeling, so hearts and minds issues. And they actually did inform the way we worked. They helped to inform the FAQs, for instance, that we've put up on our website to make sure that the detail that we gave about the project was as clear and easily understood by everybody as possible. The licensing issues were complex. At the start of the project and for quite a long time into the project, we had to deal with two licenses when we went to record with speakers. We had the iTunes U license, which in no way could fit the open release of content. So we had a separate open content release license. And we had lots of negative feedback about that. People didn't want to sit and read through two long legal licenses. They just wanted a simple form, preferably one side of A4, that they could just tick boxes and choose which release options were open to them. And that's something that we worked very closely with legal services to improve, and we actually now have a unified form that does take licenses from contributors that are broad enough to enable both iTunes U and OpenSpy's release. So what did we achieve? Well, we found that the vast majority of people we were talking to were really happy to share. We met with very little resistance, which certainly took me by surprise. I thought people would be much more concerned about releasing things as open, but they really were very, very supportive. So we currently have a significant volume of audio and video material released. It's currently over 230 hours. That's over 400 items. So we have audio, video. We have slides to accompany some of those. And for the period of the project, for the 1 year of the project, we had enough funding to provide transcripts of the podcasts, which will provide additional educational benefits. We have complete lecture series, which are proving to be our most popular items when we look at the download stats. We have interviews, seminars, and panel discussions. And over 180 Oxford academics and visiting speakers signed the Open Spires Creative Commons license and were happy to donate their material for sharing worldwide. And this is the current web portal for podcasts. It is being updated, and we have a Drupal version that's in beta testing. But this shows one of our series. All of our podcasts are grouped in series. So we have the audio items, the video items. You can get the transcript, and you can see everything is very clearly labelled with the Creative Commons license. Another achievement was the academic support that we experienced through the life of the project. and we were lucky enough to work with very supportive academic contributors, and they willingly donated their material for the benefit of students and teachers around the world. Our experience showed that people wanted to share their teaching materials for the greater good, and they saw that as an additional channel for dissemination. We found that it was important to minimise the impact on their time as much as possible, and when we asked for additional extras in certain cases, so did you have a reading list or do you have some additional materials that we could put up, we did meet with some resistance. They were quite happy to be involved if it was part of their regular activity, but it became a bit more difficult if they had to spend more time. We found that the involvement of their peers fosters activity, and many contributors were sourced by recommendation, and lots of our contributors have actually come back time and time again to re-record and provide more material. We found that the receiving feedback or their email fan mail has provided enormous motivation for our contributors. They receive emails from around the world thanking them for making these materials available, and that's from the general public, not necessarily from people within academic institutions. I think we had an example of a mechanic in his workshop listens to our early English lectures, and he sent an email to the lecturer thanking him for making those materials available. It's very important that the licences are explained clearly, and contributors need to be making informed decisions. They need to be aware of copyright ownership. We have a checking stage where we check for things like the reuse of inappropriate images in their slides, because some people just stick an image in and they think because they found it on the internet they can reuse it, and that's not always the case. So we adopted a policy of when in doubt we'll leave it out, so we do remove items. And we also took a policy of, in a seminar situation, if there was a question and answer session at the end with the audience, we would remove that because we didn't want any risk of potential future complaint or copyright issues. The project brought about a change within the institution. One of the biggest changes was the new legal form, so that can be used for all podcasting activities. And it has this tick box exercise that people can just choose to make their materials item open. Because we've built the release on standard processes and it's been devolved as much as possible, that does make it sustainable after the project funding ceases. And in fact, the project funding has now come to an end, and we are finding that material is still arriving and people, licences are arriving, and they are ticking the open release box. So we're confident that it will continue. We've embedded training in both podcasting processes, so people can come on how to produce a podcast, how to edit a podcast. We also supply training in copyright and licensing, and that helps to increase podcasting activity across the institution, but it also helps to embed the open content literacy and making people much more aware of that. And as one of our contributors said, this project has opened up Oxford like never before. It gives people a window into teaching and learning at Oxford. The material is available through multiple delivery channels, not only the web portal and iTunes. The material had to be deposited into Durham Open, which is a JISC funded repository as part of project funding. But material can also be uploaded to WebLearn, the VLE. It's available through Mobile Oxford, and of course academics generally want the podcasts on their own departmental websites. So we're trying to make the content as available to users as we can, and make it available wherever they may wish to find it. And here's an example of one of our most popular lecture series. This has actually been downloaded 150,000 times from iTunes U in about 3 to 4 months. And there it's shown in WebLearn, on iTunes U, and also the web portal. So, what next for OpenSpires? Well, as I say, we've got an established content pipeline, so more and more content will continue to be made open from Oxford. And the simplified legal form will be used across the university. We're undertaking a short study to track the use of our OERs released through OpenSpires, and that will help us to assess the impact of releasing those materials, but also hopefully help us to take any action to improve discoverability. We're collecting evidence of reuse of those resources. It's all very well making material open and putting it out there, but the whole point of it is that people actually then take it and reuse it, so we're very keen to collect that evidence. We have an early example. The Department of Continuing Education here at Oxford, one of the people involved in podcasting from there, one of the lecturers, developed a new 10-week course on globalisation purely from the OERs available through OpenSpires, and he wouldn't have been able to do that had that material not been available. So that's a good example of it saved him time. He didn't have to create the materials from scratch. He was able to just pull on podcasts from OpenSpires and create a new online course. We've also been approached by OER Africa, which is an initiative to release open content and share content with African universities. And there are two courses at Kenyatta University, and we've offered content for both of those courses, and we were happy to obviously be able to share and help in that initiative. And that also was a great motivation for our contributors to knowing that we could help in that way. Other potential projects, subject communities can use the RSS feeds and present it within their preferred systems, however they want to use it, in blogs, wikis, portals, their own VLEs. Value can also be added if feedback pathways were available, so annotations, ratings, comments, etc. We're also doing some more work on the transcripts that we've managed to produce, for example, looking at ebook options, and we've also got an early test version of some vocabulary support material. So, for instance, if someone is new to a subject or they're not a native English language speaker, we provide lists of terms that may be unfamiliar to them, which set the context, give them an explanation, links to a dictionary definition, those sorts of things as extra support. So that's OpenSpires. Please do go and look at the material and reuse it. It's there, freely available for anyone to use. And thank you very much. Any questions?
Time for
Do you mean vodcasts as in video?
Yeah,
we do video and audio.
Do you find that lectures prefer podcasts?
From our download stats, audio are much more popular. I don't really know the reasons for that. I assume that's because they're more portable and people can just listen to them on the go much more easily. But when we've had exactly the same item available as audio and video, it's generally 3 to 4 times higher downloads for the audio than the video.
I had another question. There was a hand
somewhere. I was wondering how are all these resources organized, because there's many of them. So how are they organized, and if they are dark to facilitate finding them?
At the moment on our web portal, they're organized by division and department. So we have we follow that structure, which I suppose you could look at as a sort of subject categorisation. But you can search and you can list all, so you can find them all. The OpenSpires items, if you go to the general podcast site on the Oxford site, you can go to just the open items, so they're all presented together for you. So we've made a certain level of filtering.
Our head of computer studies, he said that there's some regulation in the European Union now that you have to support educational materials for visually impaired students, hearing impaired students.
Mm-hmm.
And if all our recorded lectures now have PDF, which there are programs that can convert these into Braille and so forth. You don't have such things for all your podcasts. You said some of them are.
For the year of funding, we were able to support transcripts. So the items that we have produced within the year of funding do all have a transcript, and that is provided as a PDF version.
That's a full transcription of the book.
Of the material.
So it's like 8 pages per minute.
It's so if we had a, I've been checking some this week actually, and so for a 40-minute lecture, I was reading through 10, 11 pages of text.
Oh, that must be partially short.
No, it's the full.
It's full.
Yeah.
But it is also true that as OER, and if you want to use the audio and add your own transcript or translation or soundtrack or animation, you can do any of that with the material. So if you want to use it in an educational setting that requires a transcript and we haven't provided one, feel free to add.
I know this sounds like a really difficult question, but with podcasting, it's surprising how many lecturers actually plagiarize, maybe I shouldn't use the word plagiarize, but find things on the internet which they put into their lecture. I'm not talking about images now, I'm talking about actual text. And then I always tell my lecturers, please cite all things you've taken, but many lecturers don't do that because they're a bit embarrassed that the references at the end would be like quite long. And I have no control over that, but I think the institution that offers the courses in podcast mode should consider that.
It's within our license. They have to sign an assurance within the license that the material is free of copyright, etc., etc. Yes. So, we cover it in the paperwork, but you can never guarantee that, and that is why we always do go through that checking stage to publish, because that means that someone within the podcasting team watches or listens to everything before we put it out. Everything that's within our control.